Department, Mayor and Council. This is the March 13th council briefing. We have three items on the agenda tonight to go over with you. The first one is going to be the special events policy. You should have all received a final draft version of that document, the packet that was sent out last week, and I will turn it over to Molly Alver.
Okay, so last August we brought the event policy to you all for suggestions on making amendments. While we're waiting to make major amendments, the overwhelming consensus was that we needed to streamline our document. So we went back and revised our policy. I took it from 37 pages down to 9.
All right.
And I was able to do that by reducing redundancy. And I removed our procedural items into an internal document. It's just basically an SOP for our special events committee staff. And placed all of our day of requirements into a producer's manual. And that's minor things that we talk about with each event producer during our meetings. And there will be a signature page with that, so we have it all on file. And I'm here for any questions. If you all agree, then we'll bring this forward to a meeting in the future for it to be formally adopted.
So I must have been looking at the PDF length because I was going to congratulate you on getting it from 40 pages to 11. So congratulate either way. Maybe that includes cover sheets and
yes.
tables of contents. So thank you for doing that because it was a hot mess, and that's putting it gently prior to this. So I had a few questions, and I tried to go back to the old document and cross-reference it, but I couldn't really do that and maintain my patience. So one of the things I know we talked about in past iterations, so on page 2 of the document, festival, we used to give a time limit on that, like more than 4 hours, I think. Because what I was afraid we were going to inadvertently do is say anything with beer is a festival, which would have knocked out like the Winter Beaches Run and things like that, that maybe serving a beer at the end of a race is ancillary to the event, not the main event. So I was concerned about that. Is there a reason that we took out the time limit on festivals?
We found that the majority of festivals are over that 4 hour limit. And for us, for the police departments, the way we see a festival is if there's alcohol involved and police presence is needed. So things like the Donner Run and the Winter Run and Fest, those still have complimentary beers and drinks after the event, but it's not considered a festival against that 1 month policy.
Okay, then why? But we're defining festival in here. So if we're going to read this by the letter of the policy, you would define the Donner Run as a festival, and that would negate any other festivals in that month.
Okay.
So, I mean, am I misreading that?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's just how we've been handling it internally, but I can definitely add that piece back in there just so it's clear for everybody.
And it kind of goes with another question further down that I have. I don't have a lot, but the other one, right under that event types, the city will not approve a special event or festival on a city-recognized holiday or holiday-adjacent weekend. So we have done that recently.
Yes.
So it says will not. It doesn't leave us any wiggle room there.
That is something that we spoke about at the last briefing. And I know that we did discuss co-sponsored events like the MLK event. But as far as like having, let's say, a 904 pop-up on a Memorial Day weekend, that's something that we don't want to open ourselves up to at this point.
Right. I think where you're going, Mayor, is do we want to have in there the ability for the council to grant an exception?
When we say will not, that means will not. And that gives no room for us to make any sort of exception. So I would say
the city will not, without exception, approve a special event or festival on a city-recognized holiday.
Or with city council approval, something along those lines.
Is there a consensus to make it exception based, meaning that the council can grant an exception?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can figure out the wordsmith.
Yeah.
So we'll figure out the word. And going back to the definition of festival, is there a consensus to change that definition as well?
I think also with the one we just approved a few weeks ago with the the surf competition. Mm-hmm. I think that's, for me, I think that's a good exception because it's an actual event where it's about women, it's about making sure they're, you know, it's a good festival and it's a good sport. But that's something that I would support. Now, if someone is trying to create a festival on a holiday weekend, I don't know if, and I don't know how we would go about that.
And the surf one's a little unique too because their schedule is based on that.
The World Surf League.
Right. So, you know, they make the calendar, not the local sponsor.
Not to mention Veterans Day is not always on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. So then going on E on page 3, same thing with in terms of defining the festival. Then I like the first right of refusal for 2 consecutive years. I think that's good. And then the last thing on page 8, the city employees and sitting members on any city boards or agencies or any immediate family members should not have blah, blah, blah in any festival or special event. That one, that's really broad. And I was definitely part of this when we added that city council members, et cetera, couldn't financially benefit from festivals. But if you add special event, that could be
anything.
That could be a walk to raise money for Doll. You know, I know you were involved in one. I mean, we have events at the museum. So there's, that's a really broad, I think festivals was the idea behind that. Sorry, page 8, chapter 5, section B. I don't disagree with this, but I think this is a lot.
Now, special event, would that be Donna D and Ron?
That could be anything. I mean, any special event, it could be
any permitted event.
Where is it? Section?
Page 8. The document, page 8, not
chapter 5.
I'm comfortable with leaving it just festival, if that's how you want to handle it. And really,
or do you want to have that approved by the city council as well?
I mean, I'm fine with it being festivals, and I mean, we're all under our code of ethics and everything like that is in terms of our direct benefit through contracts with the city. So I think that that's, you know, that is scrutiny that we're already under, but I totally am fine with festivals. But I just think special event could be anything. It could be a nonprofit walk. It could be a spouse that runs a charity walk that they wouldn't be able to do it in Jacksonville Beach because of our position. So it could be.
Isn't the intent personally benefiting though?
It doesn't say that. It just says involvement.
That's financial or otherwise. So that's any otherwise any involvement. So it should just be sound have financial involvement.
Yeah. Versus a charity or, you know, that there's no. I don't think there's any issue with that.
I don't think so either.
So it sounds like there's maybe 2 different ways to go. One would be to reduce B to only be applicable to festivals. The other would be to say that any city employees or city members on any boards, etc., would all require formal council approval so that there's clarity in terms of what's going on. In other words, it would have to be brought to council for formal approval. Do you have a preference on going in either direction?
I don't necessarily like the second one because if there was council approval, does that negate the council member from other responsibilities?
Yeah. Well, I think Greg makes a great point, though, the financial gain portion. Yeah. You can't have any financial gain, whether it's a special event.
I would blow all that out.
You know, if it's the museum, the mayor's not personally benefiting from that. The museum, you know, or if Sandy's got a charity, you know, it's... That's the end. I think the spirit of the law of the policy is no personal financial gain. I would call that out.
But this says involvement, financial otherwise, and that's just.
Yeah, I agree.
Just say shall not have financial involvement, and just end that sentence there, or something like that. Because otherwise,
wordsmith it.
Personal. Any financial involvement or benefit from any festival or special.
Personal financial involvement.
Personal financial. Okay.
Yeah.
We can wordsmith that one as well.
That's all I have. Thank you, Molly.
When are we going to have an opportunity to talk about the other issues?
Right.
About you know, potentially trying a ticketed event on a, you know, one-time thing to see how that works out.
Or the September through March dates, because
yeah,
we keep doing an exception for FinFest, so that's one of the issues as well. So
our suggestion for the ticketed events, at least, were to wait until after the development and redevelopment for Latham Plaza and the municipal parking lot were determined. That way we have a better idea of what we can and can't accommodate.
Once we get an idea of the construction activities and the extent of them, that's probably going to materially affect the types of special events that can occur downtown. You know, if a surface lot goes away at the Latham Plaza parking lot, think of all the events that are held there that have some type of amenity in that parking lot. Parking lot will no longer exist. That will materially change what you can do. Same thing with the layout of Latham Plaza. Depending on what the final design looks like, that may change the size, the location of the different public spaces for utilization. So we think we need to at least get through those processes before we can start saying, do you want to consider any of these other things? And again, I don't think it's that we're locked into doing it. It's to have the discussion of, do you want to consider making those changes going forward?
Well, my thing is that this was discussed prior to some of the new members on the council. So my question is, do we have a consensus to even move forward with considering this in the future with the current council that we have, but we don't have Bill here, so.
I mean, I'd like to move forward the discussion.
You mean consider it in the future or consider it now?
Consider it in the future.
Oh. Yes.
Yes.
Because I personally don't support inclusion of liquor and expanding the length of festivals, but I don't know, I don't know how Greg feels. If there's consensus with the rest of you, then we have consensus, but otherwise.
It's just consensus to discuss it, though. It's not consensus to make any changes.
Well, but does the discussion mean that the staff has to put in time on it? That
I think if anything, it's the council having more information on Latham Plaza and the parking lot prior to having the discussion, so you'd know what the true impacts are. If you were to, let's say council said we wanted to do both of them right now, and it turns out that 4 months from now we get the report back from the architects on Latham Plaza that construction is going to take 12 months. That's 12 months that you're not using Latham Plaza, and in the meantime there's an RFP out on the street for Latham Plaza parking lot, and when the construction on one ends, the construction on the next one might begin. So those are some pretty big unknowns that are going to affect all of special events and festivals that are held downtown. I mean, that's a material effect on space availability. Uh-huh. And also, without knowing what's going to be on the Latham Plaza lot, there's going to be the issue of hours, noise, etc. from any of those events as well. So if you make that decision now, it might be premature, one way or the other.
Okay.
I have some questions.
Go for it.
On page one, and I tried to do what the mayor did, and it was hard to compare.
I sliced and diced.
There is no straight through and underline.
I just made it up. Never need to look at this again.
Yeah, so it was a challenge. But it seems that we mentioned festival in special event definition, which is under definitions there, A, in the previous one. So is there some reason why festival's not listed in that definition?
It's on page 2 as F. It's still
it's
under
its
definitions.
Definition.
Well, so we just broke it out.
I broke it out, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's treated so differently than a normal special event, I felt that it was worthy of its own definition.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, help me understand on page 3, E, festivals, it says that the number of alcohol permits per entity that may be approved by the city are limited to to the city charter, chapter 4, section 4-28. I didn't think that that applied to our to special events.
In our code of ordinance, as far as I've interpreted it and our planning director has interpreted it as the ODP permit that you get, any nonprofit entity can only get 3 permits per calendar year.
Okay, so it's not tied to the number of
liquor licenses.
No.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what it was referring to. Okay. Okay, got it.
Which is a lot less than a nonprofit can normally get, because now they can get 12. But
yeah.
The city limits them to 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then on page 5, under letters of understanding and offsite events.
Yes.
A, the last sentence says, athletic camps require permitting through the city clerk's office. Can you help me understand why it's the city clerk's office versus Parks and Rec?
Again, that's part of our code. Athletic camps are treated differently than special events.
Okay.
I think it's because of the revenue that's created.
Okay.
So it's just treated differently. It's like a business, basically, on the beach.
And then one other thing that occurred to me when I was reviewing this, which I don't think we had it in the other one, but what if somebody came to us and said they wanted to have fireworks at their event?
We tell them no.
And is there anything in here that says that?
The fire marshal typically handles that. It's the same with releasing balloons or lanterns or anything like that. That's something that we discuss. That would be in the producer's manual, for instance.
Or in the internal...
In the internal...
Special events committee. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, those are all the questions I have. Thank you for all the time you put into this.
It's been my pleasure.
You obviously put a lot.
Any other questions?
And practice that answer.
Can you imagine how many other documents need to be updated?
They're on my way. Let's go.
If there aren't any other comments or questions from council on this, are you good with us making the final changes based on the discussion and bringing it back to you for formal consideration?
Yes.
This also will need to be reviewed by the city attorney, and I have to do some final formatting, so it may lengthen or shorten the document, but I'll only make the changes that we discussed tonight.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. Next item we're going to talk about are amendments to the position classification and pay plan. And to give you the summary before we get into some of the more specifics of what we're looking to do, I will turn it over to Deputy City Manager Nelson.
So this item is, we are proposing to bring you all some recommendations to make some changes to the position classification and pay plan that will touch 5 different departments. I'm going to run through administration and each is energy and HR, and then Jason and Heather are here to talk to you about their respective department changes. In administration, we are recommending adding the communications manager to that list of positions that are entitled to or allowed to get an automobile allowance. Excuse me. that position, that's Jacob's position. He regularly drives during the day, drives his personal vehicle from location to location, take pictures, video, and just to go to some to the departments to provide support. So we are recommending that he receive the $3,600 a year auto allowance to reimburse him for those personal expenses.
Does he get, he can submit mileage, right?
He can. So if the positions that are on that eligible list, it's either or, you know, if they submit mileage, they're not getting the auto allowance. It's one or the other.
So what's his monthly mileage looking like now?
I don't know, but I can check with him and get that total for you.
And how many positions do we currently have on the vehicle allowance?
The list includes about 18 different positions, roughly. And then in some departments, like engineers, for example, in Beaches Energy, they're all eligible, but they're not all receiving the allowance. If we have a city vehicle that we can provide for them, they don't get the allowance, and if they submit mileage instead for those that drive less frequently, we'll pay mileage instead.
So I was going to say this is separate from the take-home car policy.
It is. Okay. It is. If they obviously, if they're driving a city vehicle during the day, there is no auto allowance.
Right.
These are just limited to generally the professional positions, and department heads that drive the personal vehicles on a regular basis. Are there any more questions about that? I can check and get that mileage, average mileage for you. In Beaches Energy Services, we have one utilities accountant that's dedicated to Beaches Energy. That position has typically been one pay grade below the financial accountant that is housed here in City Hall. We've recently made some changes to that job description, added some additional responsibilities for gas, natural gas utility, in addition to the electric utility work that she does. And so we submitted that position to our consultant, and she recommended that we put it on a level pay grade with the financial accountant. In Human Resources, we are recommending, your briefing memo says that we are changing an office assistant in pay grade 310 to a payroll technician, and that's an error. So we've corrected that. The actual position that we are proposing to change is an administrative assistant in a pay grade 312 to make that a payroll technician in the same pay grade. So there won't be any financial impact with this. The reason for that is the those administrative positions, we are finding more and more that we need more technical help in our various departments, and the administrative needs are getting smaller while the technical needs are growing. So we just want to move that administrative assistant over to a payroll and benefits technician so they can be more dedicated to provide payroll support. Do y'all have any questions about any of those before I hand it off to either Jason or Heather, whoever wants to go next?
So Karen, did either one of those moves or both of those moves, when somebody is reclassified like that, is that an automatic pay raise or not necessarily, or just a...
Not necessarily. In this case, we don't currently have the office assistant. That position is vacant. But if it were filled and we were moving someone over from the same pay grade, there would be no change in their pay.
They would just have a higher ceiling.
No, this is a 312, pay grade 312, moving to a pay grade 312.
Okay.
So that would be, I know, I made the error in the memo when we, instead of office assistant in a 310, it's really an administrative assistant in a 312. So that was a mistake. And we'll clear that up before it gets to you guys for a consideration. So does that answer your question,
yeah,
Greg?
But if it were a bump up in level, they would just have a higher ceiling and not necessarily...
Typically, if there's a bump up and a reclassification, we do increase their pay.
Okay.
For instance, the Beaches Energy Services, that will result in a pay increase for the account. Okay. You ready?
Maya? Yes. Thank you, Karen. All right. Well, good afternoon, guys. So the planning department has been going through a lot of changes lately, as we've talked to you guys about before. And we are looking to add two new positions to the department, but only one of those is a new full-time employee. So I'll just cover each one real quickly with you. The first one would be a permit administrator. Right now, both our building inspector and code enforcement have levels 1, 2, and 3 positions, but our permit specialists do not. So this would be that third level we're looking to add. It could be either an internal advancement opportunity or an outside hire, someone that's qualified. I keep referring to this position as an air traffic controller. We're getting, around 400 different types of applications per month. So we really are looking for that person that can kind of direct that traffic, because everyone has to be treated a little bit differently. Some go to zoning, some don't, some go to public works, some don't. So we're really looking for that really higher level permit position that can really just keep track and guidance on everything, have their hands in everything just a little bit. That would not be a new position again. It's a new position, not a new full-time employee. The second one is a planner position. I think you guys have seen how busy we are within the department. And what we are looking for is kind of an entry to immediate level planner position to take up some of the workload that we have. We've done, the building official and I have worked to restructure things and kind of shuffle tasks around to see if we could level things out a little bit. And no matter what we do, the workload still keeps going up. So we're finding that we still have that need for a second planner. We have physical space for them, so we made sure to have room so we didn't have them in a corner somewhere. But it would be a new full-time employee position, so they need a workstation and everything. And that, again, would be more that really entry level to immediate, intermediate planner level, doing things like business tax forms, minor zoning permits, short-term rentals, things like that, and kind of work their way up into the larger stuff like rezoning and comprehensive plan stuff. So this is a really good time from our perspective to get someone like this on board as we're working to update our guiding documents and kind of have them in during that process, and they'll be, you know, hopefully on board and be able to implement all of that along with everybody else. So happy to answer any questions you guys have.
Permit administrator, how many hours are you looking either per week, per month, roughly?
That would be a full-time.
Oh, that's a full-time. Part-time. I'm sorry.
No, it's not another person. It would just be another position added to the hierarchy scale, like how we have code enforcement officer 1, 2, and 3. This would kind of be that permit 3 level.
Gotcha.
Right now we just have 1 and 2.
Nowhere to use a consultant to do that, like part-time. I mean,
for some stuff, yeah, consultants are really good for like the special project stuff, but the day-to-day operations, it's really better to have that in-house because we all work so closely together. You know, 9 times out of 10, someone comes to the counter, for example, with a building permit question, and a zoning question comes next. So we're always having to have somebody available to kind of answer those questions. And our permit techs are really savvy on some of the zoning stuff,
right,
but not really the nitty-gritty. So we want to have that kind of next person that can jump in and help.
Is it worse when you get behind and we're just catching up, or is it something that's a continuous kind of need?
It's a continuous need. Yeah, no, we're always behind. We try to keep up.
So, Heather, you guys are overloaded, it sounds like. Does this satisfy and get you guys to where you need to be, or are there still going to be a
deficit?
Yeah,
I think it will. No, I think this will help tremendously. Because there's a lot of stuff that, for example, Christian has the capacity to do but doesn't have the bandwidth to do it. So some stuff can kind of shift around a little bit from some different folks, and hopefully this will help level out everybody's workload. Because our zoning permit specialist is overwhelmed as well, just with the volume of work we have coming in. I mean, we're doing over 400 zoning applications a year. That's just zoning. That doesn't even include the building stuff. It's just a tremendous amount of work, and it hasn't slowed down since I've been here for the last 7.5 years.
So this is Heather's shot at her department restructure. We've taken, I think, 4 or 5 of them to you so far. And she's up next on the slate. And this is what we think will keep them going for the next several years.
Okay.
Any questions for her? If not, we'll switch over to Parks and Rec.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. At the golf course, we are not doing a reorg or anything like that. We're not adding to the staff complement. We're simply reclassifying some positions to better align us with the current market. The first one, I guess, would start at the head golf professional. Change that title from golf course general manager, again, just to make it more interactive with this market. We actually have hired somebody for that position. They will start April 10th. The next one was the assistant to the GM. We're going to reclassify that to senior assistant golf professional and then give that person a bump in pay grade from a 316 to a 318. Again, consistent with industry standards. And then the other reclassifications are to the pro shop lead and golf shop attendants, essentially the same position, except one's full-time, the other is part-time. So that's it for the golf course. And the other position we're asking council to approve is an admin assistant position in Ocean Rescue. Again, it's not adding to the staff complement, it's just reclassifying one of the lifeguards to this position. It's necessary because of, you know, the growth and the advent of junior lifeguard programs and things like that.
Who's performing that work today?
One of the lifeguards.
Okay.
And is it going from part-time to full-time?
It's a part-time position.
Okay.
So it's basically going from part-time to part-time, from lifeguard to administrative assistant.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no financial impact.
Not necessarily.
To have a dedicated administrative position.
I'm good.
So, I've got a question.
Okay.
I didn't quite follow you there when you talked about industry standards with the titles at the golf course, and how did we have a GM in the first place? And it seems like maybe that was created when Bruce came. I don't know.
It was, and you know, if I can remember, it was more of a reward for the work that he's done to recognize, you know, how we'd taken the course, but essentially the job duties stayed the same. There was no change in duty on it. So when he left and we wanted to advertise this, if we'd advertised it the way that it was as a GM, we wouldn't be attracting that head golf professional. Mm-hmm. We'd be attracting more like a director of golf.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we reached out to other golf courses, especially municipal golf courses, we were looking to kind of compare job title to job title and pay grade to pay grade, and we were finding that almost all of them, that person in that position is titled head golf professional. So,
yeah.
So that's where we're just trying to align with the market so that it's easily understood what the job entails.
So there won't be a general manager,
no, sir.
So to speak.
In terms of financial impact, we have calculated the impact for the rest of this fiscal year for all of these position changes, and the total is about $71,000, just a little over 71, with the biggest impact being in planning and development. That's the only department that we are proposing to add a position for obvious reasons. And so if we have a consensus to bring this back to you on the 20th, on Monday night, we'll have the full financial impact.
How many of those on the golf side, how many of those are, so you have the head golf professional, you're still looking for the manager
assistant.
And two shops?
So yes, so the assistant GM, which would become the senior assistant golf professional, that position is vacant.
Okay.
We have three pro shop leads that are full-time. Two of those individuals are moving on, they've resigned.
Okay.
Mostly because they got better positions elsewhere, and that's typical for this type of position. You
sure.
know, guys will stay 2 or 3 years and then they'll move on. So we are currently going to advertise those.
Okay.
And fill those positions.
And then the top one, that's sort of the...
So that's the same job duties as the pro shop lead, except they're part-time. There are three individuals there, though, that complement is full.
And they're currently hired?
Yes.
I mean, they're currently...
Correct.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Not to that, Jason. You referenced kind of going one by one, department by department, to reorganize. At some point, can we get some feedback from Bill on how the IT...
What did we change it to?
On how that reorg is going, I would just be interested to know. I don't even know how far we are into it. Not even a year.
Well,
we should update on that.
Yeah.
And then on the same thing under planning, I know once I took seat, we were doing some conversation about a one-stop shop as far as planning was concerned with all the department heads when it came to, I guess, business licensing and planning. Are we still on track or focused on that?
Yes, that's, I believe, one of our strategic plan projects.
Okay.
Is to do a streamlining process so when people come in, they have very discrete processes that they can follow. We say, you know, ask a few questions and immediately put them into the right channel, so to speak, for
right.
processing.
Okay.
So I presume, by virtue of the fact that we're seeing this, you're in agreement with all of this, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't be in front of you if I was in agreement with it.
Just want that yes.
On the record.
Thank you.
We'll jump into the third topic of the night, which is the Ocean Rescue Division annual report out. And we have Matt Cervani in here, who I believe has done it the past couple of years, correct?
Yes, sir.
So we provided you all a copy electronically, but he's brought some handouts for you, which I think is a little more comprehensive than what we sent to you. And once those get dispersed out, we'll be in access. Thank you.
The same thing?
Yes, Judy also gets one as well. Oh. She's recommending to do it.
If there's extras, you can ask them back this way.
All right, so today's briefing, more of a conversational brief with items for your reference. I just wanted to start off by saying this year was one of our busiest, the year of 2022 is what I'm referring to in this briefing, and it was one of our busiest years we've had in a very long time. I've been a part of this agency now for 12 years, and it was definitely the busiest year that I have seen from this agency. And you know, when I talk about busyness, it's not just lifeguards seeing a beach population grow. We're talking about distress swimmers. We're talking about mutual aid. And if you flip to the first page going in, this was our 2021 annual statistics. Kind of a brief overview with the biggest number to point out, our total calls for service were 2,049. But if we jump to the next page on slide 3, which is the bottom left slide, our total call was 4,839. And you know, a little bit of that is for we've done a better job with tracking our calls for service than we have in the past. We've purchased new system to help with track calls for service. We've done a lot more training internally on what is considered a call for service and a call rendered. But even with that, our number has significantly increased. As we look at this, kind of going back to that second slide, top right, we had a total of 46 certified ocean rescue lifeguards, with 8 of those being our ocean rescue officers, which are considered the supervisors of the division. And then out of the 46, 6 of them were EMTs, which is definitely a significant growth as we try to get all of our lifeguards to be EMTs. We've actually just had 4 lifeguards graduate EMT school. We have 2 lifeguards currently in EMT school, to where now we're having some days where all of our staff on duty are EMTs, which is very monumental for us, and we're very excited to see that growth.
On your total calls for service, are those tracked individually by a number, like a CCR number?
Every call gets a an internal CCR number. We're not on a CCR system. Our system is a multi-use system. We use it for internal forms. We use it for internal notifications. So we also use it to track our calls. We don't have a dedicated dispatch system that, you know, kind of creates that, such as police and fire do. But
where I was going with that is do you discern between on-view activity versus activity that was called in?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the things that will be that we're starting to do now is tracking that on view versus call in. But I will say majority of our calls for service are on view.
Okay.
A very, very small percentage of our calls for service are called in by 911. And granted, majority of the ones that are during the off season. Such as December, lifeguards are at the lifeguard station, and you get a 911 call for a surfer that sliced their, ankle open or something.
Sure.
But a good example would be today, we have a lifeguard, sitting peg, which is at top of our watchtower, recognized 3 distressed swimmers, so that's considered an on view, or we recognized that and we responded, and I can 100% assert you that if our lifeguard was not on peg, that we would have had 3 fatalities today.
Okay.
So we do a great job with the on-view versus call for service, depending on weather and beach crowd.
Excellent.
Yes, sir. As we continue to move on, we do a breakdown in the response summary. So how many distressed swimmers did we have in 2022? It was 399 distressed swimmers. Sometimes we have multiple swimmers at once. So if today, for example, it was 3 and 1 call for service. We used to track the stats of how many times did we respond to distressed swimmers, but when I took over stats, I thought that number was inaccurate because there could be multiple swimmers within that one call for service. So now we are tracking more specifically how many distressed swimmers we respond to. So that's why that number is a little bit more significant than maybe 4 or 5 years ago. If you look back at 2021's number, the 255, that is specifically how many distressed swimmers that we had as well. So we are seeing a significant increase in that. As a lot of people don't realize, but Ocean Rescue responds to any calls, any emergencies on the beach. It's not just in the water. So our EMS calls are 274. That's first aid, ranging from providing a minor, bandage with some gauze and band-aids to something significant or severe, such as applying a tourniquet to a patient. Over the weekend we had a dislocated knee based off of a beach goer who was playing soccer, and that's very common. So we do see a lot of that. One number that we did receive some social media interaction with, for your awareness, is the non-emergency response. That's 1,057. Our lifeguard agency is an extremely preventative agency. A lot of agencies are reactive. I was just in Pompano Beach over the weekend, and their lifeguards are set up in a reactive standpoint to where they see an emergency, they respond. They get a 911 call, they respond. We, as a preventative agency, we look for areas that may cause emergencies, or we perform actions to mitigate emergencies. So that's where this call for service of 1,057 comes from. It may be additional vehicle patrols on the beach. It may be calling people out of the water from a dangerous swim area, such as a rip current or near the pier. So that's why we have a pretty high number of non-emergency responses. As I talked about also, we handle any emergency on the beach. So 86 calls for service were law enforcement specific calls to where either we saw the incident and we reached out to law enforcement, or law enforcement was on the beach and reached out to us. Fire rescue response, that's how many calls for service. So out of the 4,839 calls, 50 of those resulted in fire rescue response. Animal control was 12, and then state and federal joint response is 7. So that's how many times we've worked with the Coast Guard or FWC or state police in that aspect. Another thing that's really important for us is training. So we did a total of 4,112 hours of training. We pride ourselves to be well-trained and well-fit to respond to a multitude amount of calls for service, depending on any nature, as well as we're one of the very few agencies in the United States that creates its own internal training courses and then requires our lifeguards to handle that. And then we just have some additional administrative numbers as well that we're tracking. And then lastly, one thing I wanted to talk about was community outreach. A couple years ago, we put it on hold because of COVID, so then we started bringing it back in 2022. So these numbers are very low compared to pre-COVID. However, one thing I did want to point out is that these numbers are very special because they are usually paired up with another organization or agency to draw in beach safety. So one of my biggest, I would say, public outreach events of 2022 was our partnership with Surfing Niagara, which brings in low-income girls from all over the county and even Northeast Florida who aren't from the beach, who are not known to knowing how to swim, and we bring them in to teach them beach safety and surfing, and you know, really showing them that you know, women can be a part of the beach and embrace the beach life through various aspects while staying safe. We actually received state, national, and international attention from our partnership with this organization, so we are very happy about that. With your assistance, from a couple years ago, we finally finalized our last step. If you turn to the next page, is our beach safety signs to help eliminate sign light. We incorporated about four different signs that are posted sporadically and inconsistently throughout the beach to place these brand new beach safety signs that encompass a variety of different things, as well as a QR code that will bring beachgoers to our website. In addition to that, every downtown district beach access has one of these signs. And then we went out based off of popularity, and in South Jacksonville Beach and in some parts of North Jacksonville Beach, based off of beach density that we did a soft poll on through a one-year program, we did not put these new signs up, but we instead put two of these following two signs up that allow for beachgoers to still see safety information. And with that now, our sign program, we're now adding our beach safety flag program, so we're in phase three. And we are working with Public Works and City Signs to reinstall the avenue numbers on, up and down the beach. You know, I was actually very weary of doing that because they get stolen. That's why they're not there, is because they get stolen very easily. We actually have already had two stolen within the last 3 weeks of placing them up. And so we're looking at different opportunities or options on how to recognize where you're located without it being a fancy, nice street sign. And we're working with the dispatch center to do that, because one of the ideas that we are pondering right now is we have red number and alphabetical signs on the north and blue on the south. So if you saw a red one sign, then when you call 911 and you say, hey, I'm at, you know, red one, and we know where you're at on the beach, and we can you know, render city services. But then also it's still unique for that beach goer to know that they access the beach at red one. So, and then I just have other notable information in here. You know, we dealt with the hurricane, a couple of different hurricanes this year. We created a program called the Beach Safety Alert, which has reached national attention. We were the first lifeguard agency in the United States to have a dedicated alert to ocean and beach safety, as it makes an emphasis. So, you know, red flag conditions for 1 or 2 days is not a big deal, but if we were to have red flag conditions for a week long, and they stay consistent for a week, that's a pretty significant issue. So that's where the beach safety alert comes in. That can also go into effect. We issued a new updated beach safety alert after the hurricane from all the debris. So because we were seeing a tremendous amount of debris for 2 weeks straight, we issued another beach safety alert, but specifically for that. And that's a program that's also now been adopted by the National Weather Service, the County Emergency Management, and our local area beaches to work in conjunction with, so we're not just like a solo beach alerting. And you know, can I just send you more? And then finally, the last thing I wanted to leave you guys with is this style guide. So the Ocean Rescue Division, with partnership from city administration, has started to kind of revamp its style to allow for more of a Ocean Rescue Division feel and look, to allow for our lifeguards to have more ownership in, you know, lifeguard pride, as I've been calling it. So we didn't really change much. We just kind of strengthened what we already have and made it more bold. Our colors are still the same, but how we utilize our colors will depend on what activity you're doing. So if you turn to page 3 of the style guide, which is kind of our theme, palette 2 is our training colors, you know, black, white, with a red suit. So white shirt, black print, red suit, or you could have a black shirt, whiter print with the red suit. Our primary colors, you know, are, it just so happened also that our vendor for rash guards, which is those sun protection shirts, no longer make yellow. And we have definitely have worked with different vendors on, you know, different styles of rash guards, and we have found that, you know, the style, the material don't hold up to the work that we do. So we've actually now gone with a dark navy rash guard with a bright yellow print. So we interchangeably do the gold and the yellow depending on what our style is, but the theme is very important to us, as our documents, our logos, our uniforms are all matching the same way. And then of course we've updated our logos and how we handle different icons, debating on how we handle different stuff. And then this is also meant as a teaching tool to our staff when they go out there to do public education or public briefing or how to create PowerPoints, in that way that we can maintain a consistent style as it relates to this Ocean Rescue Division. And with that, I leave with any questions.
So who created this style guide?
I did.
This is beautiful.
Thank you.
This is really, really well done.
When he says in conjunction with administration, he means Jacob.
I figured that was the code for that. There is a typo on page 2, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Sure. So it's actually funny. There was a couple typos that was fixed.
Oh, I see it.
And then...
it's a good one.
Yeah.
I see it. Look.
They were fixed, and then when we had the documents reprinted, someone may have used an older document to reprint it for me, so I did notice exactly what you were talking about. But
I just
assured,
have to mess with you, Max. Don't let me diminish the
rest
compliment
assured,
of this is a beautiful document.
Rest assured, the current document does not have the typo.
Can you explain more into detail what you were talking about the like red one and stuff? Because, and the reason I asked is when I was in the Navy, we had different colors that we needed to identify where we were at in case power outage or
sure.
We were going to general quarters. Because I really like it, because many people aren't directionally inclined and they're challenged. You know, I could give my girlfriend, hey, come over here, but she'll get lost, even with Google Maps. So, can you explain more on the whole?
Yeah, so, you know, our city is broken up in north and south by Beach Boulevard. So what we were looking at doing was all of the signs on the north end would be one color, and then all the signs on the south end would be a separate color to delineate north and south. And then we would just have 1, 2, 3 as relates to the avenue location. A lot of our walkovers are in between avenues as well, so we would maybe do like 3A, 4A, 4B, 5, 5A, and then that would help us know, because, you know, the pier is actually on the physical beach at 4th Avenue North, but the parking lot is at 5th Avenue North, and then the address to the pier uses the parking lot's entrance location, which is 503. So the pier would actually technically have 3 different signs because it has 3 different entrances. So that's where that 4, 4A, 4B, 5 would come into play. That was just something we're thinking about. We've also, you know.
I'm not really concerned with that. If you happen to be colorblind, like maybe Greg is or something like that, then what would you do?
That's exactly why we are looking at the colors, is, you know, for our ADA beach goers, maybe we decide to do maybe 5N or 4N, just do 4N the entire time, and then on the south end, we just do S.
Okay.
You know, okay. So we've talked about that as well. On the beach safety signs as well as the flags, we do post the location of where that flag is on the side of that flag to kind of help with that. And then on the sign, every sign's getting a number that's put on top of it. So we're going to look and see how this year goes, and then we'll revisit phase four, which is the final phase of our Operation Sign Buster, as we labeled it, to kind of see how it goes.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, you guys have a great night.
Thank you.
Your extra copies.
That's all yours.
Are you really colorblind?
Way to go.
I'm blind, but see me over here like this.
Trying to bounce fair play.
Fair enough.
So that takes care of all the schedule items that we had to go over. Miscellaneous items, just in case you hadn't seen all the emails that went out today, there was a lot of activity with Florida League of Cities. There was the call in this morning, which I'm guessing some of you may have been on that call. There was a summary that came out afterwards from Florida League of Cities, which if you're all on the mailing list, you probably received the summary from the call this morning. We also had some email activity from our lobbyists in Tallahassee, political affair consultants as well, with regards to the tracking of our J bill, and also with regard to the solid waste bill that's out there, and the fact that the NWRA, the National Waste and Recycling Association Florida chapter, has taken a position against that particular legislation, which is good. I know that myself and multiple directors are working hand in hand with either our lobbyists or Florida League of Cities on individual pieces of legislation that are particularly bad for our community. And we're trying to provide information to both of those entities in order to have educated conversations with the sponsors of those bills.
Can you talk to us about the impact of the utility?
Yeah. That one's not good in any way, shape, or form. It would effectively preclude us from making transfers from the enterprise funds into the general fund, which right now we do make a transfer from Beaches Energy. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Ashley's here. She's not. But water sewer. Didn't do a water sewer transfer. If we did, it's relatively small in comparison.
Yeah, I don't know if you're not.
But it would preclude you from making transfers from your utilities to your general fund. It would also, right now under state statute, I don't know if you're all aware, but under state statute, if you provide a utility service outside of your municipal boundaries, you have the ability to charge up to a 25% surcharge for the privilege of providing it to an outside agency, which in some instances, keep in mind, is into an unincorporated rural area mm-hmm. that you're providing potable water or sanitary sewer, and you provide a surcharge for doing that. This would also require that those surcharges be eliminated, and you can only charge residents outside, you can only charge customers outside of your community the same that you charge inside of your community. So for us, the big impact is on the electrical side. For some other communities, the water sewer is a big impact, especially where they've negotiated in good faith between municipal and county governments to provide potable water or sanitary sewer to an area they wouldn't normally provide it, and to do so at a surcharge. So those two in particular are very bad. The solid waste one, the good news is we've just entered into a contract, but the bad news is that if that one were to pass, when that contract expires, it would materially change how solid waste is provided within our community. We would no longer have the ability to contract for the multifamily or the commercial waste collection. And at that point, it becomes, for lack of a better word, the Wild West, and each individual business owner and or multifamily development would be on their own to negotiate with any provider they want. And that means you'll have trucks coming in and out of the community. There's no liquidated damages that we could hold people to and hold their feet to the fire for performance, and it could result in some pretty bad situations. And I think that's why the NWRA took a position against it in particular. Any other questions on any other legislation out there?
I don't know the rest.
Again, keep looking for those emails from Florida League. They're very helpful. They give some pretty good summaries. Committee assignment reports. anybody have any committee assignments that they want to report out on?
I don't know if this is a committee assignment, but I don't know if everybody saw it, but the Northeast Florida League of Cities is accepting applications for a $500 donation per member city to a nonprofit that fills the gaps in your community. So I think it would be good if we submitted something, but they say that if you have multiple submissions, then the money may be split between those submissions. So I thought it might be a good idea if we discussed who we might want to not.
Is there a set of prerequisites?
I looked at the form and there really wasn't. It was like very bare. And it just says fill the gaps in your community. So, I mean, to me it sounds like, well, maybe it's an easy $500 that we could get for one of our local nonprofits. And so wanted to put that out there because is there a local nonprofit we'd like to
sure,
nominate?
Sure, plenty
us,
of them.
You know? Because I'd hate for us to each be doing something and then it gets split if we want to have 500 go to one nonprofit.
Okay. What about Beaches Go Green? They just did that for sure piece.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I like it.
Are you going to handle the nomination, Sandy?
I can do that.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's why
I think you're right. I think it's pretty simple as long as we have some consensus, because I think it's per member city, so it's not a competitive thing.
Okay.
There's no other report out, so we'll drop down to future briefing topics.
Wait a second. I wanted to mention one other thing.
Yeah, keep going.
Short-term rentals will be on a committee agenda tomorrow at 4 p.m. And it's the Senate Regulated Industries Committee. Tracy Davis is the only one that we know that's on that committee. But if I don't know if any of you were on the call this morning. I know you were. But the League of Cities, there's three areas that they're focusing on that we need to be focusing on when we talk to our legislators. And so if you guys could reach out to the committee members or Tracy alone, whatever you can do. But the three things are the registration cap is too low because they're proposing a $50 individual cap or a $100 collective cap, which that will not cover the cost for what we have to do when we're registering a short-term rental. Occupancy limits are not included as part of the registration allowing us to have occupancy limits, and that's something that I think we want to make sure that we continue to be able to have. And we need stronger language for the DBPR enforcement and accountability to make sure that gets handled appropriately and there is enforcement and good enforcement and accountability. So if you guys could reach out before tomorrow at 4 p.m., I think that would be really good. And then the financial disclosures, I don't know if you want to talk about that at all. Do you guys know about that, Bill? Is everybody familiar with it?
Hi. Yeah.
Corey's not? Okay, this would require elected officials and city managers to complete the Form 6 instead of the Form 1, which is a more
highly details where all your investments are, and
okay.
We don't want that.
No.
I think the problem with that is it keeps people from running for office, good people. If you started, especially at an entry-level politics. You know.
That's, a lot of the city managers have been pushing that back to FLC, is that specifically on the elected side. You know, it's supposed to be nonpartisan at the local level. And if you start telling people in your community to serve in a nonpartisan capacity to help your local community, you have to disclose all of your financial holdings and assets. There will be a lot of good candidates that get dissuaded from doing so.
Yep.
And that's not a good thing.
So J-Bill will come up Wednesday. They're going to package it with other local bills. If it passes the House on Wednesday, then we'll just go to a consent agenda at the Senate. So I would say, we've got everything we can, so we should be pretty positive outcome.
Also, super quick, did you cover pension? So we had our pension meeting, quarterly pension meeting, on February 14th. Perfect time. And
nobody brought chocolate to that one.
I know. Pension is strong as usual, and in fact, we've gotten to the point now where we're starting to look at some diversification models and breaking out some of our investments. So we're doing real well with our pension.
Sandy, can I ask, you were the point of contact for us for Penman Road. Has there been anything new and exciting on that?
No.
I asked Rory, who was the point of contact, and he said, me.
Well, for us, we asked Sandy to be.
What do you want me to find out? I talk to the city every day. I know it has not gone out. It'll go out in a
They've gone radio silent. I mean, Robin Smith is who I've been able to reach out to, and...
Well,
he's
always a
little slow in getting back to me, yeah. But
they're all really slammed, I think, with the administration change.
Right.
It's kind of a holdup.
That's
but
what I'm hearing.
It's going to be packaged with additional projects for CEI coming out sometime in the next couple months. And then my understanding is it will be sometime later this year.
Well, but my question that still hasn't been answered is there's supposed to be a community meeting. To talk about, to present the concept and get community feedback, and there's just, it's crickets, total crickets.
I think it's going to be after the
election. The election. That's what I'm hearing too, yeah. But that's
I've had
crazy.
Several, well, two businesses reach out to me in reference to that as well, so.
Thank you.
The only other thing that I had is that actively pursuing funding for our urban trails project. We did connect with somebody in DC that is very, very knowledgeable, and she just happens to be in Jacksonville for the next couple of weeks, so we're going to meet with her Thursday to with Molly and talk about potential funding options. You know, we need to come up with, really, are we looking at 12 million, 15 million, and try to figure out, see if we can get something allocated here in the next year to go ahead and just get it all done. If y'all are okay with that.
Yeah.
Instead of doing $300,000 a year.
Yeah.
I'll
take $15
million.
$300,000.
Future.
There's a lot of money out there for bike ped stuff, and you know, we just need to figure out the right way to ask the question, and we're in a really good, it's a really good time to ask.
Future briefing topics? Anything in particular that you'd like to get updates on, reports on?
Just a couple minor parking issues. I mean, people are getting incredibly creative about parking in the downtown, especially yesterday. I mean, beach was packed, and there's a lot of people parking on sidewalks and on the curb and everything, so I don't know if we just need more enforcement. I started to have an issue. There's more and more semi-trucks parked on A1A. Granted, it is a FDOT roadway. I don't know if we can completely remove tractor-trailer parking on that road. That's something I'd like to potentially...
We've actually got some information that I think it was shared with the mayor today from the police chief. I'll make sure that information gets sent out to all of you, but this has been a recurring issue for the past several years, and I think it was either 21 or 22 that we went to DOT and asked them to take a look at it, and they basically did a short study and said we see no reason to change the way we currently have the roadway set up with the parking. In terms of enforcement, Chief Smith tells us that the parking standard is you can't be out there for more than 60 consecutive hours.
60?
60 consecutive hours.
Okay.
And so the problem is that if somebody calls us and says this truck has been parked here for the last day or two, we can't really start the clock on the 60 hours until we know and can confirm when it was there. And so 99% of the time the vehicle is going to be moved within 24 hours of us even being notified of it.
So I understand in the more of the commercial area, but the one area in South Jacksonville Beach that's come up recently.
Is that the one across from Home Depot?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of, there shouldn't be any need for parking there. Is there any way we can touch base with DOT again and see if we can either just hash it out so nobody can park there, or extend that turn lane all the way down to Ponte Vedra Boulevard or whatever that is?
We've got the police chief coming to the next briefing.
Okay.
He was going to talk about CALEA standards and also some other topics. We'll put the issue of A1A and downtown parking on there as well, so that you can all have a dialogue with him about what they're seeing for parking and some things that you might want them to look at in a little bit more detail.
And the only other location is under the bridge for Beach Boulevard. Is that DOT or city? And so at the end where people fish, people have pulled out all the no parking signs. And so there, I think there's like four or five missing in there. I don't know if that's something that is something we would replace or DOT would go.
Yeah, check. I believe I checked that a week or so ago for a similar issue and saw that the DOT right-of-way actually extends out and encapsulates the loop road.
Yeah, I would think it would. Well, yeah.
Okay. Any other topics that you want to talk about? If not, then in the next briefing, we are going to talk about CALEA standards. Police chief may also give you a drone demonstration. I've also got written down here potentially a taser demo.
Dan's had one before.
I've had one before.
Horn will do it.
Yeah, well, Bill,
I nominate Horn.
Bill volunteers.
We're also going to have finance is going to present their budget assumptions for the 2024 budget project. Started doing it in the week. That's everything I've got, so if you've got nothing else, thank you all for coming tonight.